to develop, and that is how to develop a discipleship team in your church or school. How to develop a discipleship team. And boy, that title is very broad, very broad. And there are all sorts of teams. There are all sorts of levels of teams. And for us to pick one or two and dive into it would be kind of a waste of time, because I might not be scratching where you're itching. So to kind of prevent that from happening, I like to ask you a question and get your inputs. When you saw this, how to develop a discipleship team, what questions did you have in the back of your mind, or what were you expecting to have answered by being here? And if we could take a few minutes and you could tell me what that is, then I can redo what I've done and go where you are. Because the first group that I met with this morning, I covered the basic principles that I wanted to cover very quickly, and then we got into what they wanted to talk about. And I'd like to do the same with you all. Okay? What is it that you're looking for?
Well,
sir?
When I saw this, I was wondering what I could do to use in church, with, in our church, with our own young people, and not just the young people, but the others who are really interested in being better disciples. In my own church program, local church program.
Okay. How to better equip the young people and the adults in your church in a discipleship program. Okay? Good. Thank you. Okay, other ideas?
We have a discipleship program on my church. I want to see if one can help improve. See maybe what I'm doing wrong or what I can do even better.
Okay, and John, where are you functioning?
I'm Southeastern
Oklahoma State University, Durant. In Durant. Well, how about that? Very good. I've been up through there once. Okay, good. Thank you, John. Glenda?
I'd like to know how to get into school. I'm not in my job yet, but I will be honest. How to get into high school to get permission to let students do things like civil programs.
Okay, I won't tell you how to get in there, but we'll talk about once you're there, where to go from there. How to start from scratch at a location and build a team. Is that what you're after? Okay, you know, like one man in this city in a neighborhood, or one girl in a dormitory on a campus or whatever. And what do you do from there, and how do you come up with a team? That's where most everybody's, what you're looking at. Okay. Steve?
One problem I think I've got is that people with a certain variety of commitments, and I'm not quite sure who the group is, and who's commitment that should really be about what, and telling them how to go about working with people that are interested in something more than I do, what kind of things to work with them on.
Is that tape recorder running? Do you want to punch it for a minute? Okay. Any other comments?
No, I just have a question about hand-raised guys that are at different points in the spiritual walk.
Okay, how to build a team when you've got people at all different points in their relationship with the Lord. Okay, that'll come up in the course of what we're doing. Okay?
Well, I'm at UTA.
Uh-huh.
And one of the things that first thing occurred to me when I was thinking, you know, when I saw that was how to get people closer together. Because you have the students coming in at different times in the DSU, and they go here and they go here. And how to get the fellowship closer so the evangelicalism on the campus can be real from the inside, you know, from the bottom.
Okay, that's a derivative of the same thing we talked about a minute ago. It has to do with interdependent relationships, the body meeting with other parts of the body.
Right.
Yeah, okay, good. Yes.
Uh-huh.
Okay, great. I think one of the things you're going to find, no matter what church or organization you get into, church or parachurch, you're going to find imbalance. And Bible churches have their particular set of problems. Extra church organizations have their particular set of problems. And the Southern Baptist Church has its particular set of problems. And they're all different. And we've got to learn to work within the framework of the peculiar set of problems, strengths, and weaknesses of each of these various kinds of groups. And you put your finger on the that kind of church and difficulty, because that's traditionally where it is. Okay, let me start with some just fundamentals that I want to toss out and just kind of make a note of these things, and then we'll quickly do as we did this morning, get to you as an individual putting together a ministry so that out the other end can come a team. Okay? What is a team? Well, the dictionary defines a team as a number of persons associated in some joint action, especially one of the sides in a match. That doesn't help a whole lot. Like a football team. And there are some examples of teams. Salesmen generally function in teams. And you think immediately why they do that. You know, there's a lot of discouragement in sales, particularly door-to-door sales. So they get together teams to go out. I know a fellow of mine has his Kirby company, and they go knocking on doors, and they function in teams. Well, the military has its basic unit, a fire team. Two fire teams equal one squad. And it's built around one automatic weapon, five guys on a team. But, so the team is the basic unit of function in the military. It's that way in business, it's that way in the military, and what about in the Christian realm? Well, I would define a team from our perspective as this: a group of Christians banded together for the accomplishment of an objective. A group of Christians banded together for the accomplishment of an objective. Now, is this whole idea of the team biblical or not? Just kind of review the whole New Testament in your mind. Is it the team biblical? Yeah. Yeah, you'd say so? Okay. You'd say so? Okay. What is it that you're thinking about that would bring you to say that it is?
The early church.
The early church, Christ and his disciples. Okay, let's pick up on the concept of Christ and his disciples, an example of the team. Turn in your Bible, if you would, to Luke chapter 1, or Luke 8, verses 1, 2, and 3. Did Jesus function alone? Obvious answer to that is no, he did not. Now, Linda, do you have Luke 8? Okay, would you read the first three verses in Luke 8 loudly, please?
And it came about that afterwards, he began going about from one city and village to another, proclaiming and preaching the gospel of God, the kingdom of God, and the trouble with him, and also from women who had been healed with evil spirits and sicknesses. Mary, who was called Magdalene,
from the seven demons of Gaia, and Jonah, the wife of Suza, Herod's steward, and Susanna, and many others who were contributing to their support out of his private name. Okay, I think this is probably the most concise statement of team that there is in relationship to Jesus and his ministry. Now, who was on his team? Now, who are the obvious members of his team? The 12 disciples. Is that all?
Women.
What is this world coming to? All right, there were 12 men and there were some women on this team. And what in the world did the women do on this team?
They applied their needs.
Yeah. Yeah, they had a, they contributed to their support, and they met their needs. I'm sure they did a lot of the support, the cooking, and that kind of stuff, so these men could continue their function together. Well, that's some team. I mean, you kind of get the idea that Jesus kind of walked around and never ate and slept or any of the rest of it. And you wonder, how in the world did all the ash and trash of that get taken care of when that's such a major part of our life? Well, there was a team that worked together to make that whole thing possible. All right, now, yeah, I agree. There's a team there. Where else is a team used in the New Testament?
The church went out.
Okay, another example is Paul. All right, and remember, Paul got converted on the road to Damascus, and they spent 3 years up there in Damascus and Arabia, came down to Jerusalem, spent about 14, 15 days there, and then they told him, get out, you're making too many ripples, go back to Tarsus. So he went back, and he was there about 11 years or so, and then Barnabas came after him, and they went to Antioch. And then they, the congregation set aside two men to go on a missionary journey. And who were they? Barnabas and Paul. Now, they functioned on that first trip as a team. They came back, and what happened? Yeah, they had a little conflict, didn't they? Now turn in to Acts chapter 15. Now, as a result of that conflict, that they say, that's it, I'm going to take off, I'm going to do this thing myself. Or how'd they go out again? So Acts 15, verses 39 and 40. And there arose such a sharp disagreement that they separated from one another, and Barnabas took Mark with him and sailed on to Cyprus. But Saul, or Paul, tacked off, took off on his own for the second missionary journey. Is that what it says? No, what did he do? Man, he grabbed a hold of Silas. And so together, the two of them went out. So now instead of one team of two men going out, you got two teams of two men out on a missionary journey. Okay, so we have an example here from Acts 15, 39 and 40 of Paul operating and Barnabas operating as a team. Okay, how else is the team concept demonstrated for us in the New Testament?
The disciples were sent out two by two.
The disciples were sent out two by two. You bet. Let's see, where I can't remember the reference for that, but when the 70 went out to minister, Jesus sent them out in twos to go before him. And that's another example of a team concept. Where else? The whole body and its functioning is a team. How so? Yeah, one purpose, but what?
Different gifts.
Different gifts, which make us what? Interdependent. See, I know by you being a member of the body of Christ that I need you. And I also know that you need me. And when both of us have got that in good, sharp perspective, you can't stop us. So the whole concept of team is involved in just the body function. How about the functioning of a local fellowship? How is that set up? Team concept or not? Okay, in Titus chapter 1, what was Titus' mission in setting things in order that remained and doing what? He was said that he was told to set in order what remains and appoint, is it an elder? In every city. In every place I know of where this thing comes into view, it's a plurality of leadership. And it seems like the New Testament teaches from these statements, or the implication is that those local congregations were in the hands of multi-leadership. It was not a one-man show. It was team leadership. Okay, and of course, I think the most obvious example of this whole concept of team is what God has in mind in the husband-wife relationship. Both functioning, both going toward the same goal, committed to one another, but both having different roles to fulfill. And functioning together how? As a team, as a unit. And I think in that relationship, you ought to be able to see all of this crystallized. Okay? Now, why form a team? Well, I'd say this. I'd form a team, number one, to accomplish an objective. That's implied in our definition of team. Another reason I'd form a team is for mutual encouragement and protection. The third reason I'd form a team is for balance and cross-training. And the fourth reason I'd form a team is because it's just plain power that goes beyond the sum total of each of the individual members of it. There is a dynamic that far exceeds each individual functioning alone. Okay, accomplishment of an objective. Now I'd like to just spend a few minutes developing these ideas with you here. What is the objective of the team? If you're going to form a team or work toward a team, then the team has got to be formed for some reason. People in this church who put on this conference, what they do, they had to form a committee, which would be another word for a team, to work together for the accomplishment of the objective, putting on this conference. And then after the conference is over, the team dissolves, and they go back to more normal functioning. So there's an objective involved in this thing. Well, I think we can very easily come up with what the objective should be for any team if it is going to carry the overall biblical mandate to its completion. And for this, you're going to have to take my word for it. You don't have to believe what I say, but you do have to think about it. Okay? And this is all wrapped up in the Great Commission, which I think is a significant, significant part of the New Testament. You know, I kind of got concerned when I went to the Navigator conferences. You hear the Great Commission preached on, and they preach from Matthew 28, 19, and 20. Go make disciples. Now, why do they preach it from Matthew? Well, it says what they want it to say. Now, I go to a Campus Crusade Solution Bowl, and I hear the Great Commission preached on there. Do they use Matthew 28? It's not on your life. It doesn't say what they want to do. They preach from Mark 16, 15. Why? Because they want to preach the gospel to every creature. Well, I said to myself, self, if they now do this, and Campus Crusade does this, then I wonder what the whole thing is all about. I'll study Matthew, Mark, Luke, John, and Acts, and kind of put it together in a composite, then form my own organization. So I looked at that, and over 3 years of working on this business, I came up with a whole study of the whole concept of New Testament discipleship, an inductive approach to the thing. It has really opened my eyes to a lot of things. I'll share this with you, just what the objective is, and then you can think about it. And something you ought to do, there's only 271 references to discipleship in the New Testament, and you could work through that and come up with your own study to determine what the concepts and principles are. They're important to know if you're going to give yourself to it. Okay. Now, in Matthew 28, the disciples are told to what? Make disciples. How do we know that? We know that because that's the only verb in the sentence. And the other three actions there are participles. They modify or support the main verb in Greek. So it's make disciples. Now, who has been given the mission to make disciples? The disciples. Now, was that statement an idea or was it a directive? It was a command. Jesus said, hey guys, I got an idea. What do you think of it? He just said, based on the fact that all authority in heaven and earth is mine, go make disciples. They didn't vote on it or anything. He just told them to do it. In the last part of that sentence, it says, teaching them to observe all things that I commanded you. Now, when those disciples go make disciples, they've got to teach the people that they disciple to observe all the commandments that Christ gave them. What was the last commandment that he gave them? Make disciples. Whose responsibility is it to make disciples? Huh? Yeah, the disciples and the people they discipled, and then they'd pass that on to those that they discipled until we get to 1975. Whose responsibility is it to make disciples? Huh? I gotcha. Who is to do this? I am. Why? Because it's part of the body of commands that Christ gave. A significant one that he gave. What is involved in this? Make disciples. And then I think what the bulk of content gives us from the rest of the passages that deal with this subject is the how-to. The participles. As I go from Matthew, or go, as Mark says, I what? Preach, as Mark says. Baptize, as Matthew says. And teach, as Matthew says. Luke tells me what I am to preach. John gives me the model for this whole thing. And Acts gives us the geography of it. They each add a little different dimension to this thing. So I think there it is. I am to make disciples as I go, or go, preaching, baptizing, and teaching. This, I believe, is the process of making disciples. And how is this done? Well, we'll develop this idea in just a minute. The point I want to make is that the objective of the team ultimately has got to be, as I understand the New Testament, making disciples. You can say that different ways, but it's going to amount to the same thing. You can say, well, the objective is to make converts and then help them to mature in the faith. You haven't said anything different than I've just said. It's the same thing. But that's the idea. And I think this is how the Great Commission presents the idea. Make disciples. And I would say this, that if what you are doing, you cannot see contributing toward this process of making disciples, then you better reevaluate what you're doing with your time. Because I think this is the overall directive from the commander-in-chief that gives us direction, tells us where to go while we're down here as strangers. Okay, so somehow or another, the team, I think, needs an objective, and the objective needs to relate to that some way. Now, in order to have a team, here are some things I believe you need, and then we will jump into what you're after. In order to have a team, you need to agree on a common objective. The second thing you need is an accepted leader. The third thing you need is agreement on methods and activities. Next, we need a strong sense of interdependency among the members. A strong sense of interdependency among the members. And lastly, a division of labor. Okay, the common objective we have already discussed in great detail. Now, the accepted leader. I think this relates to the question that came up earlier. When you are working with people who do not see you as their leader, then you do not have a team. For example, if people are coming to you for help, but they're also going to this church and to that group and to that over there, then don't try to take that person if that person does not share the same vision and commitment to the thing that you're giving yourself. Don't try to force that person to become a team member with you. Or don't think that you've got a team with a person like that. You don't. About all you have with a person who does that is a help relationship. And there's nothing wrong with that. If it meets the needs that that person has, and you're happy to do that, then go ahead and keep at it. But you cannot build around a person who has his or her loyalties divided three or four ways. There's nothing wrong with that if that's the way the person wants to go. That could be a manifestation of an inner a problem. I think there are people like that because they're afraid to personally commit themselves, because if they do, they're going to have to come out of themselves and reveal themselves. And a lot of people are scared to death to do that. And so in order to prevent from doing that, prevent themselves from having to do that or get into that situation, they will hop from one meeting to the other, from one group to the other, always looking for something new, rather than finally coming to the point where, well, there isn't anything new. What I need to do is find somebody to get with and start putting to use some of the things I've already been taught. Well, that is a mentality that we're working against in this kind of a thing. And if they're not looking to you for leadership, then some things are going to have to take place, or they do. Or if they don't, things don't take place, don't try to build anything around a person like that. Let them go. Just help them. Okay, the other thing here, agreement on methods and activities. If you have a common objective that you're working toward, like making disciples, see, there are all sorts of activities that will help you accomplish that objective. And if you and your little team get together and decide, well, we're going to have Bible study and we're going to use, you know, the Campus Crusade study booklets. And this guy says, well, I don't like using the Campus Crusade booklets. I want to use, you know, Jensen's Bible study book. We say, well, fine. What would you like? Well, they discuss it and you decide, well, this is what we're going to use. Then in order for this thing to function as a team, y'all are going to have to decide to use the same thing and stick in there with it. And the guy says, no, I can't do that, don't want to. Say, you know, fine, you don't have to. It's not a question of being spiritual or not, it's a question of want to function with us or not. See, and let them go do their thing with somebody else. There are 52 other groups around that they can relate to, and maybe they can find something that they could do better on their own or with another group. It's no big deal. And of course, where you can allow freedom and, you know, do it. You know, but there are some things that you're going to commit yourself together to do as a group that everybody needs to agree on. And if you decide that, you know, part of this team is to encourage one another in scripture memory, and we're going to, you know, as a team, we're going to memorize some verses and check up on one another, and somebody says, well, I don't want to do that. Well, you say, well, you don't want to Bible study with it? You don't want to memorize verses and kind of encourage one another in that area? Then, you know, maybe there's something better for you to do. Do you see what I mean? When you build toward team, you're not, the team is not open to the public. Some of the team activities are, perhaps, but then there are a lot of it that is not. It becomes to get exclusive. Okay? And then the interdependency among the members. And this can only come about as a result of interpersonal relationships. And when you have a strong leader, it is difficult for those interpersonal relationships to develop, because usually the people focus on the leader and come and get what they can from him, and then they go their separate ways. That's why if you're bent on building some people into a team to function together, it is important that that team do lots of things together. And you take the time out. You may move into an area, you're coming to the city of Dallas, for example, and over a period of years find some people you're going to band together in a team, and you may have to just pull back from all kinds of outreach and running around and spend a year developing the relationships of everybody that is you're teamed up with, so that you have a good solid platform from which you can launch out again next year. See, what I think what we make a common mistake of doing is coming in, finding these people, meet with them, and they're off involved in all their ministries, you're off involved in yours, and you kind of bump off one another, and you never really do get to develop the interpersonal relationships that you should have in order to function more effectively. And it really isn't a team that you have. What you have is an association of five individuals or so that are off doing their things. You're not using one another's gifts and collectively functioning and hitting an area. And I think in the Navigator ministry and Campus Crusade and some of these others, we have really missed the boat on this issue. Because we take a man and we'll send him to a college campus or to a city, and there he is. He has got to be Mr. Public Relations. He's got to be a recruiter. He's got to be a Bible teacher and expositor. He's got to be a preacher. He's got to be able to serve. There's no end to it. I mean, he is supposed to, like Paul, probably wouldn't make his team. Do you see what I mean? But I think if we seriously think of this, we'd realize that most of us, yeah, I don't know if you hold to a one gift concept per believer or whether some have more than that, I don't know. But tell you what, not too many people I know of that got them all. So I think at a leadership level, if we put together two or three guys that do have different strengths and they attack a college campus or a community, it takes a tremendous amount of pressure off people. You know, this guy can teach. Man, let him teach. Let me go out and get him. And I'll round them all up, collect them, and baby, you teach them. And then we'll relate to them. See, but everybody's kind of functioning in the area of their strength. And it really takes a lot of heat off. See, and I think this what we have come up with today, the professional pastor, has two or three problems inherent with it. And that would be one of them. He is supposed to do everything. And the poor guy has got an image to live up to that is impossible. Okay, and then the last thing is division of labor. Of course, that's related to gifts. That people function together where they're gifted. Okay, now these are the basic kind of deal, kind of concepts I just wanted to lay out. And then let's get now to how it works. This smiley face sitting up here, you know better how it works than I do. Have you heard of that BSU down at Waco? Baylor. You heard of the Baylor BSU? That's something else. There you are. And individual. And here out here are 20,000 students in dorms and on the campus. What are you going to do? Yeah, you... when you can stop your knees from knocking, you'll pray. You bet your life you'll pray. Well, where are you going to start after you pray? You know, you've marched around the place seven times now. You prayed, and no walls have fallen down. Okay, then what? Meet people. Is that a good start? Okay, we're going to meet people. Where are you going to meet people? Where they are. Where are they? They're in the dorm? Yeah. Where? Walking around campus? Where else?
Cafeteria?
Library?
Student union.
How about the classroom? Bad connotation, huh? Yeah, they're all over. Remember, as I go, as I live life from day to day, I have to get up, brush my teeth, feed myself, and then go out and bump on into people. Okay, you go to the classroom and you sit down next to the guy here and you say, "Hi, Tim." He says, "Who's this guy saying hi? I've been here a week and nobody said hi." I said, "Hi." And you talk. And you do this for 2 or 3 weeks. You know, you're not going to talk to him about the Lord right away. You're scared to death. And you discover that Tim plays paddle ball, and you do too, see? Or he likes to tinker around carburetors, and you do too. And so you kind of do this thing, and you talk, and you know, what do you think about this thing in Vietnam? The thing is terrible, man. Grief. Yeah, I do too. You know, I said, I wonder, you know, why God lets that happen? And you know, Tim picks up on that, and he starts talking about God. You know, and you ask him a bunch of questions about church and about what he thinks about this and what he thinks about that. You can ask, there's enough questions you can ask him for a week. And he says, "Who's this guy that's interested in what I believe?" See, he hadn't said word one. You're in pre-evangelism, see? And old Tim just thinks you're kind of the greatest thing in the world. And then after a while, he gets around and says, "Oh yeah, I wonder what he believes." And he asks you. And you tell him. See, and maybe he's had an opportunity to see a little bit of that shine that you get in the morning from the Lord in your life. See, and then all that is going to come together and have a tremendous input in his life. Now, what's going to happen to him sooner or later? I'll bet you a lead nickel, if I don't miss my guess, if you're faithful to the Lord and hang in with him, he'll meet him. It happens. Okay? There's a convert. And of course, then you're talking to people. What else have you come up with? Some backslidden Christian. Boy, am I unhappy. You know, and there you got them. And you know, this one over here and that one over here. And, you know, after about 4 or 6 months or whatever, you know, taking your time, you're not, you know, bent on ripping something off here, then what are you going to do? What would be the next step? A Bible study. Does it have to be a Bible study?
Could be just a rap session.
A rap session would work beautifully. A Bible study would work. But it would probably be best to get them involved in some kind of a pool activity or a common activity that would eventually work itself into a Bible study. Okay, let's say you've got 10 that have decided to come together for this thing, and you've got the Bible study started. And you're going to use a little booklet Bible study so that they have to prepare before they get there. Or that's where you're going to work. So you might start in a Bible study like in John or something like that where there's no preparation. Just come and lead it. Well, that 10 may could go to 6. And then you get the 6 you've got are really keen on going on, and so what you do is show them book 1 of the NAV series, for example, and say, "How would you like to fill this out?" "Yeah, great, we'll do it." Okay, so they go home and they do that Bible study, and they come back, and then you share the treasures of the personal Bible study with one another. Isn't it fun to look at other people's treasures and see the nuggets that are there? What we generally do in Bible study is just kind of look at everybody digging while we're all together and look at everybody's dirt. But when you do it before you get together, you're not doing Bible study together, you're checking out treasures. And that's rich. That right there will change people's lives. That's the whole secret of the Navigators. I bet the secret of BSU too. People getting into the Scriptures and digging it out for themselves. That'll change a man's life. Okay. So what you've got now is a pool. Have you committed yourself at this point to anybody in that pool? No. The relationship that you have to these people is just a friend and a helper. Are you involved with them? Yeah, sure you're involved. But the commitment is basically to the Bible study. Now, if this Bible study continues, say, for about 6 months, what are some things you're likely to observe? Faithfulness. Yes. What else will you observe? Pardon me? How, yeah, if a guy's hungry or not. Yep. What else? Okay, dedication and commitment. Yep. What else? Okay, probably it will be low on observing personal needs unless you spend some time with them. What you'll observe is what they're willing to share in a group. But you're not sure where they really are. And I'll tell you this. You can never tell why a person is motivated to perform, to do a Bible study. I've noticed that people will perform Bible studies and will memorize scriptures so they can be included in the fellowship. The fellowship means that much to them without having any real heart for God. And you need to know that before you commit yourself to a person. Okay? Okay, well, anyway, you get to observe, for example, you get to observe how he thinks. You'll be able to tell over a period of time if Christ is central to his decision-making process or not. And this, how can you tell if Christ is the center of a person's life? Well, to me, one of the key ways of reading that out is a person's reference point for decision-making. That tells me a lot. You know, is his main concern what God wants or what he wants? Does he relate to people for himself and what he can get out of it, or for what he can give that other person? See, another thing you'll observe is the guy's concern for people. And then you can observe his response to the word. Now, if you see this guy comes and for the first month he's been doing his Bible study, and then month two, well, it's done half the time. Never does he write out a personal application. That tells you something. And you may minister to that. But are you going to teach? Are you going to commit yourself to that person? No way. But see, then there's another person who's there. And this other person has that Bible study done and an application written out. And as that person shares that application, you can tell that God is getting through. Bing. So you may start with a group of 10 people and end up over a period of year getting to the point of committing yourself maybe to one person. And there you want to work toward developing a personal relationship with mutual commitment involved. Now see this? At this level, you may meet with this person and begin to impart to this person vision, talk personally, find out really what's going on down inside, where the person really is living. See, today I'm standing here, I'm talking to you about team, and some of you will share back just brilliant, neat ideas. And inside you may be hurting badly in some area that's not even related remotely to what we're talking about. And all the time I could think, man, you're doing really well. Boy, she's drinking all this in. She's an exciting person. You only to find out after personal involvement, that ain't the case at all. So that is what results from personal relationship. Now, I don't want to make a cut and dry deal. I don't want to imply that you never get together personally back here. You do. And you do things together, fun things together. But you don't commit yourself There's a big distinction from helping a person and being committed to live life with a person.
And what you're saying, as a leader, you make yourself with someone who is ready to commit himself.
Yes. Yes. Yeah, because see, a lot of good people could be in here, and if you go for that kind of a strong relationship too soon, you'll scare them away. Or a very insecure person will jump to that immediately and say, "You bet I want it." Only to discover at the end of 6 months you've made a bad mistake. You've got yourself committed to a person who has no intention of becoming involved in the lives of other people because they're too wrapped up in their own problems. And beyond that, you could minister to that person with all those problems just as effectively at a distance as you can spending 18 hours a week with them. Because what they want really is not help with their problems. What they really want is somewhere where they can get their emotions reinforced. And you cannot give yourself to that kind of a person. Your ministry will evolve into a dead end. And you'll have to break it all off and start all over again.
It's a little like clearing my mind, you know, about the relationship with all these people. Because, like, this personal, in-depth relationship, it would seem like you were taking on this person as your disciple, teaching what you know and everything. But do you think that this is what the Scriptures want all the believers to be like, having this in-depth personal relationship?
Let me beg the question and approach it from a different direction. I do not believe that the Lord wants you to have this relationship with bunches of people. I would say that for where I am, I can work with three people like that at one time in kind of a personal relationship. I can help a bunch of people. You know, I can, you know, meet with you this month and see how you're doing, check there and help you with this and get together with you next month and that kind of thing. And, you know, there's a personal involvement there. But it's not going in the direction that I'm talking about in terms of building a team. See, where I am now, responsible for North Texas, I'm looking to put together a team. I don't have one. I've got people who function under me in the Navigator hierarchy. And we have an official team. But, you know, Beckendam is in Wichita Falls and I'm in Fort Worth. Do we function together? No, we don't function together. He does his and I do mine. I help him. That's about it. But see, what I'm looking for is a guy in Fort Worth who I can travel with, talk to, can pick up the slack in my ministry, and we can work together. See, that's what I'm talking about. And I've got some candidates for that in the back of my mind. See, I've been in Fort Worth for almost 3 years. One of my problems is that I get somebody to that point of level, you know, like old Lewis Hill, and off he goes to, you know, Stillwater, Oklahoma at OSU. You know, and praise the Lord for that. But here I am back on square one again.
Well, this is kind of like Jesus, what he said, you know, when he sorted the 12 out of all his other disciples. But you see, he sent them out. His purpose wasn't to have them to stay together all the time. But they were like to train others to send them. I think this would be cool, like to train like elders, you know, people real strong who could teach other people.
You can apply this concept at any level you want to. What was Paul's objective with Timothy?
Paul was a teacher.
Yeah, from my understanding of studying that thing through, I don't think Paul had in mind that Timothy functioning as an independent minister. Timothy was to help Paul in his ministry. And when he saw the handwriting on the wall, Timothy got sent off to Ephesus, and Paul had to write a bunch of things to him to get him to function in that capacity.
Timothy wasn't very spiritually enough. I think Paul wanted Timothy to travel with him and help him in his work until Timothy could get up to the capacity.
How many years did Timothy stay with Paul? Does anybody know? I can't remember. It's a bunch of years. far beyond what would be a normal type of training situation. See, but Paul related to other people, like Tychicus, that was an independent minister. Aristarchus was always with Paul, but ministered separately from Paul in the same city. Always an activist and always in trouble. And in jail. See, and you study these different personalities, and they function differently on Paul's team. Some of them were to hang in to help him for a long time. Others were to spin off and become independent ministers. But what I'm talking about here is you going through a process of being able to find a person that can minister alongside of you and help you with the load that you have. Now, we can apply the same principle and stop at any level less than that. Okay? Yes. Yeah, you can work together like that. But usually one person will be the leader and the other person will give the leadership to the other. That usually will come about. Someone will just let you take the leadership. No. No, you can start off with a Christian getting together with three or four other Christians and working through that. That will present you with a peculiar set of problems. Generally, there will be difficulty in motivating those people to be involved with non-Christians. Or you can start with non-Christians, lead them to the Lord, and develop a battle-oriented mentality right from the beginning that will excite the Christians that are observing this from the side and hopefully put a tone in your ministry that's lacking in most Christian groups. No, I'm not saying that. I'm just saying that you have a... One is slower to get started than the other. And, you know, you got your own set of problems either way you slice it. But each will have a unique set of problems and a unique set of strengths. Now, what I want to do, I just traced the big picture of this thing. Now, see, you can stop at any point you want. You can get together your 10 people in Bible study and say that's the people you've decided to work with, and you want to work through a series of commitment with these people. Well, how can you do it? Well, one thing to do is you can have the group agree that we want to kind of form a team at this level. And what's the objective? Well, the objective is to motivate one another in the basics of the Christian life. Okay, what are those basics that we want to motivate one another in? Bible study. Okay? And what should be our objective for these next 6 months of Bible study? Well, we'll do this Bible study. And how much time should we spend on it? Oh, roughly 6 hours a week. Okay? Good. We all agree to that? We'll commit ourselves to that. Yes? No? Yes. Okay, what about, well, we want scripture memory part of this? Yeah, we do. What's a good commitment? Okay, basic 2 verses a week. Everybody agree to that? Agree to that. And you have got yourself a team committed to encourage one another in those areas. And then you meet for Bible study. Well, you begin to see that there's some people who committed themselves to that aren't doing it. What are you going to do? Well, I find that people rise to the level of expectation. Then in a group, if there's no expectation for anything, they will rise to that level. If there is higher expectation, then a lot of people will rise up to that level. And, with the idea, well, I never heard it that way before. See, and what I'm talking about is not to put people in a legalistic bind, but to help people with what they want to do. And they kind of set their own standard to this thing. Well, if you see that, you know, there are 6 of these people who are really hanging in there and encouraging one another and that kind of thing, and these 4 of them just really aren't with it at all, you could get together one by one with those people and just say, we made this agreement, didn't we? Or in the whole group. How are you going to do it? And you know, we're serious about this thing. And you know, you either follow through with it, find someplace else to go, because our objective is not to fool around in this area. And you draw a line, and there are six on that side and there are four on that. Now, is that hard? Yeah, you bet it's hard. But are you serious about what you're doing or not? Can these other four go other places and find fellowship at the level of their desire? All over the city of Dallas. Why do you have to provide that for them? You don't. Because your objective is different than that. So you have now got yourself a discipling team that is committed to one another for the accomplishment of a limited objective that you feel is important and is taking you toward the objective of being a disciple and eventually making a disciple. Pardon me? Okay. So the responsibility of the leader is this. First responsibility is to be a servant to those people that are on his team. That is the whole issue of leadership in the New Testament. Serve and lead by example. It's not exercising all this authority over as Gentiles do, but it's relating and meeting their needs. Okay, I think the second responsibility of the leader is for defining and articulating the objective of the group. I think he is responsible for the action of the team. And he's responsible for helping the other team members identify their areas of strength so they can function in them. And he's also responsible for the spiritual development of the people on that team. Yes?
Okay, Father, I think what is really suggested, when you come to the point where you're willing to commit yourself to one of the people, I'd say, how much of the vision should you impart to them? Should you go ahead and tell them, here's what we're going to do, and here's the ultimate one, and then we're going to start off a bit at a time and progress?
Okay, it depends on the maturity of the group. If they are relatively young, then you wouldn't share the whole thing with them. It would be too much. They wouldn't understand it. You'd put just enough out in front of them to keep them motivated and exciting, and over a period of time, they'll get the picture.